Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments to read today, and we are in the middle of our discussions on the relationship between Winston Churchill and his father, and so we want to jump right back into that today. I have my wife, Deborah, with me here in the studio.
Thank you.
Welcome back. We're happy to have you. I want to open today's program with a quote. And at the very end of the program last time, we were talking about how Winston's parents' neglect gave him that drive to be resentful and bitter of authority. But one thing, Manchester makes a great observation, and that a lot of great men and actually a lot of great leaders actually experienced the same thing, where they were neglected as a child. And this is on page 121 of his book, The Last Lion. And it's a great definitive biography of Winston Churchill. And there's four volumes to it. But he writes here, says, "In Cradles of Eminence," and this is another book, "their study of childhood patterns found in the lives of men who later distinguished themselves, Victor Goertzel and Mildred George Goertzel, found that Winston's family provided multiple examples of the qualities in parents and other relatives which seemed to be related to the production of an eminent man." Now, that's amazing. "There was respect for learning, an experimental attitude, failure proneness, a plenitude of opinionated relatives, and turbulence in the family life as a result of the erratic behavior of his irresponsible uncle and father." And so I think there, all the biographies, or the biographers, I should say, of Winston Churchill are just amazed that he was able to come out of this childhood that he had. And so to me, that's really, it should be a big hope for all of us that had, you know, somewhat of troubled, you know, family relationships. And I know that, you know, my father, he did take care of us. He gave us, we had food, we had clothing, we had a warm place to live. We were dry when it rained. but he didn't necessarily spend a lot of time with us. And, I mean, there were periods where he did. But it just seemed like, you know, he was raised Irish. He was raised by a heavy-handed Irish mother. And so sometimes, well, I think it was still a carryover from the Victorian age, where they didn't pamper kids like they do today. So let's talk now a little bit about the time when they sent him to school at 7. Now, you went to boarding school, dear.
Yes, well, I went in high school. So and that was hard enough. But yeah.
So let's talk about St. George's. He was 7.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe. Sending a little 7-year-old. And isn't it true that something like that she took him part of the way, the mother, and then left him, and he had to go, he was left off at the train station or
right.
something?
Essentially,
he was 7 years old.
Yeah, he was 7. He thought they were going to go together mm-hmm. to the school. She dropped him off at the train station, gave him the 3 crowns, and said, "They'll pick you up on the other side." So he went to this school at 7 by himself. I think I've said this before. There's one time I was about 6. I tried to run away, and I, you know, got a big handkerchief and packed some snacks, put it on the stick, and walked about a block. And I thought, "Oh, what am I going to do tonight?" So I can imagine being put on a train with 3 crowns and saying, "Okay, here's your fun money for the next term." Basically, that's what it said. But here's what Manchester says about it. "He was 7 years old, and his parents decided it was time he left home." You know, at least I was allowed to stay home till I was 19. Says, "On November 3rd, 1882, 5 weeks after the start of the autumn term, he was enrolled as a boarder at St. George's School near Ascot. a place famous for its women and horses. St. George's was an expensive school, £52 for the first month, payable in advance, which prepared boys for Eton. Remember the last program, we said that the Churchills were Eton men. And so that was another tough public school, which is really, in this country, we call it a private school. But Eton was tough. But Eton prepared people to go on to, you know, Oxford and Cambridge. And so, of course, you know, Randolph wanted his son to be able to go, obviously, to Eton and then on to Cambridge or Oxford. But we know that did not happen. And that's really just not what was in store for Winston at all. But notice how Winston responded to it. It says, Winston wept when he was told he must go. He said, and this is a quote, he says, I had been so happy in my nursery, he wrote later. Now it was to be all lessons. Precisely how he traveled there is unclear. Jenny rode with him to the Paddington station in Randolph's private hansom, but on the train platform they parted. She gave him, 3 half-crowns and sent him on alone. He lost the coins, panicked, found them, and arrived trembling. It was late afternoon and dark. A master led him to a desk, handed him a thin brown green Latin grammar, told him to memorize the declension of Mensa, and departed. Now, I don't know about you, but that would panic me as a 7-year-old who had been at home in a nursery with a very loving nanny, taking care of him, and he had all his toy soldiers. So that would have been really tough. But what's really funny is what happens after this. So let me just read this. Yes. This is really great. It says, when the teacher returned, Winston reeled off a perfect recitation. The man seemed satisfied, and Winston, encouraged, asked, what does it mean, sir? He told him, Mensa means table. Winston pointed out that according to the book, one of the forms would then be translated as O table. He asked why. The master explained that this was the vocative case. They would use that in addressing a table. Astonished, the boy blurted out, but I never do. The master snapped, if you're impertinent, you will be punished. And punished, let me tell you, very severely. So, I don't know. I think that's hilarious.
Well, it shows how bright he was, that he didn't immediately memorize it. You know, he was able to memorize it, but if things didn't make sense to him, it just didn't make sense. He didn't follow the rules, and so he was going to be punished.
No, and the thing is, he actually hated the school, but again, he had this anti-authority attitude. And again, the only person I think he really warmed up to and really listened to was Womany. And that was, you know, that was his only kind of like, his inner tube on the river or something, or his, you know, his life vest or his life jacket was Womany. And so, but it's interesting. And again, it just shows something really good about Churchill's personality, because he, like you were saying in the last program, he did idolize his parents. He, even though they neglected him, he didn't get bitter in a sense against them. Now he had authority problems, but notice what this is again. This is, but to me, a part of the sad part of the story. It says, Manchester says, that was the quintessential St. George's, the school in microcosm. Churchill would remember how I hated this school and what a life of anxiety I lived there for more than 2 years. I made very little progress at my lessons, none at all at games. I counted the days and the hours to the end of every term when I should return home for this hateful servitude and range my soldiers in line of battle on the nursery floor. Now, he wrote that in one of his autobiographies. But when he wrote to his parents, listen to what he said. Manchester says, however, he did not tell his parents that. At the end of the first month, he wrote his father, I am very happy at school. You will be very pleased to hear I spent a very happy birthday. And the same day he wrote Jenny, I hope you're quite well. I am very happy at school. But this is unsurprising. Boarding school boys who felt wretched and badly treated seldom mentioned it in letters home. And so it is just, again, it's really, you know, really kind of cruel. And, you know, it sounds like something out of a Dickens novel.
It does, doesn't it? Well, and I think in some, I read somewhere that they were really raised under the whole idea of the English, you know, keeping a stiff upper lip.
Stiff upper lip.
Stiff, I can't say that. Stiff upper lip, yes.
Sorry. We're American. We can't say stiff. Stiff upper lip. Anyway, it's just amazing what he went through. And, of course, his parents never came to see him there.
Never once.
Mm-hmm. And it's just really, I mean, how can you do that to a 7-year-old?
I know, it's hard to believe.
It's just really shocking. Anyway, this is what Manchester says about this whole experience. He says, the regimen was fierce. This is going to this school as a 7-year-old. The regimen was fierce. 8 hours a day of lessons, followed by football and cricket. Then there was fagging. Now, fagging is when the younger students had to do all the work for the upper students. So that's not a term that people would understand today. So there was fagging and there was floggings almost every day. The chief whipper being the Reverend H.W. Sneed Kinnersley, a sadistic headmaster who would lay as many as 20 strokes of birch on a boy's bare rump. Given Winston's extremely sensitive skin, this must have been excruciating. Yet he became and remained the school's chief rebel. He excelled in history, but refused to learn Latin verses he did not understand. In his words, where my reason, imagination, or interest were not engaged, I would not or I could not learn. And I think it's more of a matter of I would not, because everyone said he was a genius. He was a genius kid, especially with history. He says, pitted against authority for the first time in his life, he defied it, refused to curry favor, and was, as a consequence, beaten until he shrieked. He later wrote, my teacher saw me at once backward and precocious, reading books beyond my years, yet at the bottom of the form. They were offended that they had large resources of compulsion at their disposal, but I was stubborn. And so it just seems like, you know, a hard thing, a really hard thing. But here's what's interesting about this whole time period is it was womany. It was Mrs. Everest that discovered what was going on there. And he had to come home. He had to come home on leave. And this is at page 127 of the book. He came home from a term. I guess I don't, it sounds like it's military, but I mean, he came home on a term break. He says, Wom undressed him and recoiled when she saw his back and bottom crisscrossed with welts. She summoned Jenny, and the sight of his wounds told her what he, in the mute, torturous language of a child, had been trying to tell her for 2 years. She immediately removed him from St. George's and entered him in a small school run by two maiden sisters in Brunswick Road, Brighton. But here's what's really sad in this whole paragraph. Very likely Randolph knew nothing of this incident. His own letters show that he did not even know how old Winston was. I mean, that's just amazing. But the other thing that Manchester adds to the end of that paragraph is Mr. Sneed Kinnersley, age 38, dropped dead of a heart attack. And so someone was watching out for Winston. So that's just, again, it's just really shocking, isn't it?
Yes, with that, yeah, it is shocking, but I guess the law that was the way instruction was done then, you know, at that time period. You know, I mean, but it didn't have to be quite that violent, but it was that way in Dickens' novels, so, you know, so, yes.
It's interesting today, you know, if a teacher talks too tough to a student, they can get fired.
Yes.
You know, and there's not even any, you know, physical abuse. You know, you can't even tell a kid, well, you know, comb your hair. You know, well, that's oppressive. If you tell it, what do you mean wearing those kind of clothes to school? Well, that's oppressive. You know, so anyway, Well, it is interesting that, you know, he did go on to Brighton, and actually it was a better school in terms of discipline, but it may have not have been necessarily a better school, you know, educationally. But it's interesting, just to again, I'm bringing this out just to show you the impact that the lack of Randolph's attention to Winston created this in him. And I think Manchester definitely has it right there. It says when they got to the Brighton, Brighton was run by two sisters, and they were Kate and Charlotte Thompson. But this is interesting. I'm going to read this for benefit of all of our parents today. It says, Brighton, it says, with its sea air, Chaly Beach Springs, colorful architecture, and general atmosphere of freedom was a distinct improvement on St. George's. But Winston continued to play the imp. Any form of discipline still incensed him. Now, this is a quote every parent out there should listen to. The word permissiveness cannot be found in any dictionary at that time. As a concept, it did not exist. Even if it had, Kate and Charlotte Thompson would have condemned it. They expected docility from their wards, and the record shows that they did not get it from their new boy. In his first term, when he passed his 10th birthday, his conduct was ranked 26th in a class of 32. By the next term, he was at the bottom, and there he remained. Charlotte Thompson wrote Jenny in her first report that frequent absence from the schoolroom made competition with other boys very difficult. His dancing teacher, Vera Moore, later depicted him as a small, red-haired pupil, the naughtiest boy in the class. I used to think he was the naughtiest small boy in the world. Even the indulgent Duchess Fanny, in whose Grosvenor Square home he spent holidays from time to time, wrote to Randolph, "Winston is going back to school today. Andre knew I do not feel very sorry, for he certainly is a handful." So even his grandmother was saying, man, this guy, he's a handful. But here's something really bright. Yet the Thompson sisters treated him with kindness and understanding, and he began to respond. At the end of his second term, they noted very satisfactory progress. And after the third, very marked progress. He was the first in his class near the top in English, French, and scripture knowledge. He began to enjoy school. And so here, Winston finally got the right connection, you know, with the right people, and the people that were warm and friendly to him. But still, you know, that didn't necessarily impress, you know, his father at all. And, you know, he was so worried that he was going to have a tutor all summer. So one of the next big sections I think we ought to talk a little bit about is his father's assessment of him. And, you know, it's true, he liked the subjects that he liked. And if he didn't like a subject, he just didn't pay any attention to it. And so you know, I think it's amazing that this is on page 129. He was so afraid that he was going to have a tutor, but he actually was doing well. And, you know, his aunts, you know, were taking him to meet other writers and things like that. He had a chance to see Buffalo Bill. I mean, that's, when I think about that, Buffalo Bill Cody, that's like ancient history, but he was able to go see him. But it seemed like his life began to really, you know, take on some, you know, he began to be happy, and actually his relatives began to really like him. That summer he was sent with his cousins, and here's what William Manchester says. He says, Winston erected a fort with the help of the gardener's children, dug a moat around it, and with Jack's help built a drawbridge that could be raised and lowered. Then she said the children were divided into two rival groups. The fort was stormed. I was hurriedly removed from the scene of the action as mud and stones began to fly with effect. But the incident impressed upon me, and Winston became a very important person in my estimation. That was a quote from one of his cousins. So the cousins really fell in love with him. Shane Leslie, Leonine's son, remembered that we thought he was wonderful because he was always leading us into danger. There were fort struggles, fights with village children, and raids on the nests of predatory birds. Can you imagine what he would do with people? So the thing that's interesting, Lord Randolph was also impressed about this. And here's what Manchester says. It says, "An impressed Lord Randolph one day, he put his head in the door and studied the intricate formations of," and again, he's looking at Winston's nursery. He asked his son then in his early teens if he would like to enter the army. In Winston's words, "I thought it would be splendid to command an army, so I said yes at once. And immediately I was taken at my word. For years, I thought my father, with his experience and flair, had discerned in me the qualities of military genius, but I was told later he had only come to the conclusion that I was not clever enough to go to the bar." So even Manchester says, "On such slender evidence was so weighty a verdict reached." You know, you just have to ask yourself, where are his parents when he was having all these school trouble? Why weren't they really encouraging him and you know, counseling him and, you know, helping him?
Yes, because he excelled in the areas he was interested in. And so, you know, nowadays, you know, we have all kinds of teachers that would, you know, enjoy that and would encourage a person, you know, who has had interest like that.
He was obviously a genius.
Yes.
And, you know, and of course, look what he did for Western society. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting here that I think all the relatives began to catch on that there were real problems in the family. And here's what Manchester says, and I think this is really good. He says, "There seems to have been a tacit acceptance by the relatives of both parents that Randolph and Jenny were not really responsible for their children." And so in some ways, that was really good for Winston because he got to be around his aunts that were also American. And they would tell him he's American, and they would encourage him, you know, to get out and try and do different things. But if you look at the Churchills, well, they were into their stiff upper lip. And, you know, they were happy, rich country people, really, in the long run. So you can see that it's just very sad that two people that were obviously very talented couldn't be good parents.
They weren't interested.
No, they weren't interested. Mm-hmm. It is interesting that I think it's even Randolph's political associates were more concerned with Winston than the parents were. And of course, Manchester brings out the time he got double pneumonia. And how, you know, they hardly even came to his aid, and they were getting reports from the doctor, but at the bottom of the page, it's interesting. And this is page 132. I mean, he was really on his deathbed, and it says, notice it says, "A child of the aristocracy was in jeopardy, and the Churchill's peers were closing ranks. Because Randolph was at the pinnacle of his career that year, powerful men were concerned for Winston's survival." And I'll just stop the quote there, but more than his family was. "Sir Henry James prayed for him, so did Sir Michael Hicks Beach. Lord Salisbury, who had succeeded Disraeli as the Tory leader, wrote of his anxiety from Monte Carlo. And Morton Frewen told Jenny that the Prince of Wales had stopped the whole line at the Levee to ask after Winston. In a sense, the boy's recovery was an affair of England's ruling families and the humble people whose lives had touched his did not belong." It's just amazing that here most of England was concerned about Winston. You know, his father didn't even know how old he was.
Right, yes. You
know, that's really kind of sad.
Really sad.
All right. Now, here's a final quote I want to give from the book. I know about his parents. And, of course, the quote ends up with how Randolph really felt. And, you know, it's really a sad quote in many, many ways. It says, "Indeed, unlike his wife, he really wrote Winston. Jenny was a lax mother, but later, when her situation altered, she became a loving one. In Randolph's case, that was impossible. Randolph actually disliked his son. That's kind of heartbreaking.
Yes,
for me.
That's heartbreaking. It's clear. I mean, that he just is honest.
Yeah,
you know,
he just didn't like his son. But yet, when we look at Winston Churchill, he idolized his father. As Manchester brings out in the book, he loved his father so much, he read every newspaper article he could find on him.
Yes, he kept scrapbooks.
Yeah, he cut magazine articles. He pasted them. He kept books on the man. And so to me, that's just a remarkable part of his character, that he would still love a father that just highly disliked him. And so, you know, that's really kind of amazing. You know, I just think that says a lot about the man, Winston Churchill. And, you know, it's something I think we can really learn from. So it looks like we're out of time for today's program. So next time, we're going to begin our discussion of Winston Churchill's political career. And I'll have a special guest, but you're going to have to wait to that program. We're quickly approaching the second book in this series, also by Paul Johnson. The book is titled George Washington, Founding Father. You can find this book on Amazon for about $13 for Prime members. You can also find a used copy of the book for around $4 at abebooks.com. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at jbliterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. Remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.